Well, if not now, when? Well, the answer usually is later. I'll do it later. I'm busy now. I'm tired. I don't have any money. I have to walk the dog. Most often my answer is, oh, here he comes. I don't have time. I don't have the time. That's my excuse of choice. I use it like Kleenex. And this month I have been catching myself at it more and more, particularly as I focused in on this sermon. Do it now. No, I can't. I don't have time. For example, on Monday, I was thinking, I really want to get this sermon done early this week. I won't have to work all day Saturday like I did last month. I could get out and I could get it done and enjoy the good weather and play a round of golf and play the piano. And this week was going to be better. I would have a good draft in my hand by Wednesday. All I needed were a couple of big, clear, uninterrupted blocks of time. I woke up and saw that trap for what it was Thursday evening. It was only 45 minutes until dinner. Might as well turn on the TV and relax for a while. Automatically thought, I'll get to it right after dinner. Right after I've had my coffee and a cookie. Right after MSNBC is over. Right after I finish with the paper. Right after I call my son. Right after I clean the bathroom. That last is true, really. Not that I cleaned the bathroom that day, but it's not really a joke because in seminary, one of the schoolmates informed me that that's really the best time. Have you ever noticed you do jobs that you wouldn't think of doing right before you have a tough job that you're putting off not doing? So she confessed that the best time to clean the toilet was right after or right on the night before a big paper or a sermon was due. So there's a lot of clean toilets around in the churches Sunday. That was Thursday night, and I was deeply into denial, which is not the river in Egypt. I was lying on the sofa realizing that I was rationalizing, that I was putting it off. Duh. Not a brilliant discovery, but a valuable one. I remembered a friend who told me that she hadn't felt that she had much time. And, I mean, that's nothing different, but she somehow knew that she would die at about the same age that her mother had died. And as she got close to that age, there seemed little point in taking on projects that would require years. In particular, she didn't want to deal with a broken relationship that she'd had with her brother, so she didn't, not for years. She didn't make any overtures to heal the hurts that were there for years and years and years. And then, wonder of wonders, she lived past the age at which her mother died. She was still alive. What a dilemma. What to do? Well, what she did was she changed her assumption. After all, it was wrong. She was still alive. She began to assume that she had time. She assumed she had time. That little tiny shift in how she looked at her life started an avalanche. She was able to start doing things that she had put off for years. She began to make overtures to her brother that had been kept on hold for all those years. Her eyes lit up telling the story to her friends. What a discovery. She could assume she had time. She freed herself with that one little conjecture. Now, I wish I could report that she and her brother were very close after that, but it does take time. It will take time. But at least now they have a chance. What's important is that her relationship is no longer on hold. You know about on hold. You make a phone call. You're almost instantly told, not asked, told, can you hold a minute? Well, that minute becomes 5, 10, 20 minutes, interminable minutes filled with Muzak and intermittent announcements about how important your call really is. And even if you don't believe a word of it, you hang on, strung up, twisting slowly in the internal winds of time, waiting and waiting and waiting. So to be no longer on hold is a true blessing. Do you feel the relief breaking through old barriers we put up between ourselves and others, between us and projects that we really deep down want to do, breaking the barrier between later and love? What a relief. Now, this isn't to say we can do everything we want to do and get it done today. We know better. We make choices, but we must ask, if not now, when? And ask it dozens of times every week, maybe every day. But when we operate assuming we have time and that we're not about to die, less of our lives needs to be put on hold. Then we are able to do things that really bring us fully into the moment. I bring that up because the biggest reasons we lose time is that we're so preoccupied with worry about things that we haven't done. So we're able to keep focused on the task at hand. I mean, you've probably been doing something that you really needed to do and wind up halfway through thinking, oh, gee, I forgot to do this and that and the other thing. And it just wrecks our being able to be in that present moment. Here's a story from Reverend Katie Mateague, Unitarian minister, lives where it's a custom to put up a cross on the roadside where a fatal accident had occurred. She writes, on Route 17 near where I live is a small hand-lettered sign. Appeared about a year ago on the shoulder of a curving road that slopes steeply down to a lovely reservoir. Accompanied by a fluttering shrine of ribbons and artificial flowers, the sign simply reads, "We miss you, Katie." I never make the drive without noticing the sign. The Reverend Mateague continues on. And last month I noticed it had been replaced by a slightly more legible one and nicer formal printing. The message was the same. I don't know who Katie was or anything about her, except that she died in an accident at that spot, and she was loved. I don't know who left the sign or who periodically replenishes the ribbons and flowers and worries about whether it can be still seen, but in all its anonymity, Katie's shrine is a gift to all who go beyond the obvious caution of driving a little more carefully. It goes beyond the stark reminder of mortality and the knowledge of every moment holds a potential for sudden and devastating loss. The sign has become a religious message, a mantra formed in the poignant language of someone else's pain, calling us back to the most essential lesson in every religion. And the lesson is, pay attention. Someone out there misses Katie, although I'm bothered each time I see this roadside declaration of grief. I'm also grateful for the way it wakes me up. It seems that I'm making the question, if not now, then when, into a life and death issue. In fact, I am. If we don't tell the Katies and brothers in our lives that we love them, they may unexpectedly leave us or we leave them. Getting in touch with the present moment is a choice. Death is a certainty. So the answer is, if not now, when, may sadly be never. Now, let's consider what Reverend Mateague called the most essential lesson in every religious tradition, to pay attention. Why is that so central? And how does it relate to my question, if not now, when? Annie Dillard is exceptionally good at paying attention to the present, to the now. At times, she's gone into seclusion for months just to sit and think and write. She claimed that the busy city life leaves her drained, too drained to really pay attention. She sees it as pushing our lives into the future. She wrote, "I remember how you bide your time in the city and think if you stop to think. Next year, I'll start living. Next year, I'll start my life. There's always too much to do first." She's down on city sophistication and high on country innocence. Innocence, she says, is, quote, "the spirit's unselfconscious state at any moment of pure devotion to any object. It is at once a receptiveness and total concentration, and it can be chosen, can be chased and caught. And any time, anywhere, just innocent like a child, innocent like a puppy." I love the way that Annie throws her words together to urge the feelings that she has. Quote, "like any other of the Spirit's good gifts, innocence is there if you want it, free for the asking. It's possible to pursue innocence as the hounds pursue hares, single-mindedly, driven by a kind of love, crashing over creeks, keening and lost in fields and forests, circling, vaulting over hedges and hills, wide-eyed, giving loud tongue to all unawares, to the deepest, most incomprehensible longing, a root flame in the heart, the warbling chorus resounding back from the mountains, hurling itself from ridge to ridge, over the valley now faint, now clear, ringing the ear through which the hounds tear, open mouth, the echoes of their own wails dimly knocking in their lungs." That's how to pursue innocence. That's how to suck the marrow out of the moment, out of the now. But why, we ask? Because if you don't do it now, all you'll be left with is commentary. Along with Annie Dillard, I think my favorite writer is Mary Oliver. And she wrote a poem lightly titled, "It's 6 a.m. 6 a.m. in a certain time of the year when the sun is just coming up. The small pond turtle lifts its head into the air like a green toe. It looks around. What it sees is the whole world swirling back from darkness, a red sun rising over the water, over the pines, and the wind lifting and the water striders heading out, and the white lilies opening their happy bodies. The turtle doesn't have a word for any of it, the silky water, the enormous blue morning, or the curious affair of his own body. On the shore," she says, "I'm so busy scribbling and crossing out, I almost miss seeing him paddle away through the wet black forest. More and more the moments come to me. How much can the right word do? Now a few lines of lilies are faint, flamingo inside with white hearts, and there is still time to let the last roses of the sunrise float down to my uplifted eyes." Just sitting watching the sunrise near a pond. That's the offering which being present for just a few moments early in the morning beside a pond has given her. That's what it is out there if we really pay attention. I had a friend in seminary, and we got into a habit of saying to each other at certain times a simple, single word. The word is this. It's shorthand for, I'd like you to take in all that this moment offers. This view, this music, this smell of cooking, this feeling, this soft puppy's fur, the silent, the sunlight bouncing off the river. This is everything you can catch in this one precious moment. It's a good habit to develop. I highly recommend it. I can recall some of my this moments years back. And I know that otherwise, without that intentional focusing, I'd not remember much of the wonders after a few minutes. The present is all we have. As Joan Reading Eckhart told, has reminded me, that's one of his main messages. The present is all we have. And the present is so fleeting. Catch it if you can. This special room, this air, the seat you're sitting on, these people next to you, the light coming through the windows or the from the lights, the smell of this place, does it have a smell? What do you hear? You're breathing, paper being rustled, someone with a cough. How do your clothes feel? Warm, soft or scratchy, tight or loose? Is your mind busy or calm? A lot going on in this moment. Each moment, our senses are loaded with the news that they're trying to send to our consciousness. But often that information doesn't reach its goal. Our self-consciousness waylays it. Annie Dillard is talking about this moment when she stopped at a gas station. She'd been driving all day. She was glad to get out of the car. She was waiting to have her car serviced. There was a puppy there, and she's petting the puppy, and she's sipping her coffee, and she's watching the sunset on a hill behind the station. And she was so fully into that moment. The feel of the puppy, the colors of the trees and the rocks, the taste of her coffee, every detail is fascinating. Then she thinks about what she's enjoying, and it all evaporates. She writes, "The second I verbalize this awareness in my brain, I cease to see the mountain or feel the puppy. I'm opaque. So much black asphalt. I sip my coffee. Thanks for the memories." She said, "It's ironic that the one thing that all religions recognize as separating us from our Creator, our very self-consciousness, is also the one thing that divides us from our fellow creatures. It was a bitter birthday present from evolution, cutting us off at both ends. It is impossible for us to stay present for very long. That's just the way our brains work. So it's essential to catch as many brief moments as we can. Hook the minnow of the minute out of the fast-flowing stream of the present." Annie says, "These are our few live seasons. Let's live them as purely as we can in the present." Now, let's see if we can make a transition from the philosophical and poetical to the practical. It's one thing, for example, to sit beside a pond, blotting out the past and the future, and write a beautiful poem, or a poem that aims to reflect the beauty there. But it takes quite a few things to do that. It takes time, though most of us can find a pond and a few moments to go there and sit. It takes being there, not being in our heads somewhere back in the past or off into an unreal future. It takes wanting to be there and trusting that it will help us find the present. And it also takes the intent and practice of writing. Another example that's probably closer to some of us, I remember when I began bird watching. It's really hard to just watch, for me it was, the bird. Initially, I was in a hurry to on numbers. I wanted to get a lot of birds. I wanted to have a large number of species on the list that I checked off. I would drive to a park or some likely place to have good birding and stroll down a path, what I thought was a slow pace. I would hear a bird, and if I could not see it, I'd keep on moving. Often the bird somehow turned on its cloaking device and vanished anyway. My wife at that time, on the other hand, was content to find a spot and sit. Just sit. Women. I thought I'd see more birds moving along the trail. My list of sightings would be longer than hers. One more thing. When I did sight a bird, I'd quickly get out my bird book and spend as much time looking at the picture and reading about the bird as I did really looking at the real thing. I was after knowledge and certain identification. I didn't know what she was after. Maybe it was just that she liked to look at birds. It's taken me years to slow down. I now even stop and sit occasionally. And wonder of wonders, it works. Not only that, sometimes I like it. I still carry a bird book, the Golden Field Guide, and I'm interested in adding to my list, but sometimes I am able, as Archie Bunker used to tell Edith, to just stifle myself and simply enjoy the beauty of a bird. I remember one time in Pennsylvania looking at a grackle, a particular grackle, high up in a sycamore tree. It was a bright afternoon. The sun bounced off of its oh-so-silky black feathers. Feathers that I noticed for the first time had a greenish hue to them. I'd never particularly liked grackles before that one. Can't say that I really love them anymore, but I was nearly blown away by its beauty. And then a moment later, a male cardinal came by, such brilliant red against the clear blue sky and the mottled sycamore bark. I didn't even get the bird book out. What is the present? How do we describe it? Annie Dillard was quoting a subatomic physicist. He says, everything that's already happened is particles. Everything in the future is waves. She says, well, that's what the physicist says. She says, let me twist his meaning. Here it comes. The particles are broken. The waves are translucent, laving, roiling with beauty like sharks. The present is the wave that explodes over my head, flinging the air with particles at the height of its breathless unroll. It is the live water and light that bears from undisclosed sources the freshest news. The Diamond Sutra of Buddhism puts it this way. Thus shall ye think of this fleeting world. A star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom, and a dream. If not now, when? It's all goes so fast. Catch it if you can. Live the moment as if it were the only one given you in this miracle of life. Ask yourself, what do you do that fills you to overflowing? What thrills you and pushes out all thoughts of the past and the future for a moment? Is it music? Is it a sunset? Is it a bird? Is it time with a special person? Maybe a hobby, or perhaps your job if you're lucky. I think it was the movie Dead Poets Society that the students took the motto, Carpe Diem, seize the moment. The Nike Corporation ads aim us at using our bodies and yell, just do it! And so I ask you, realizing all the pressures and temptations not to seize and not to do, and realizing the pressures on our overly busy lives and the limits of our time and strength and resources, realizing all that, I still ask you to take a second long look at the present, at your now, at this, and assume you have time before you go. Assume you have the talent, and most of all, assume you have the desire, the drive and love of something you've wanted to do for a long time. Assume all that and ask yourself the simple question, if not now, when? And then wait in the quiet for a moment for the answer. In this world of time and space, created in love, full of joys and sorrows, beauties and terrors, in this world without end. Amen.